It's time for Wise Up Radio, leveraging your learning, leadership, and legacy with your host, Donna Kembrand, here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Coming up on today's show, Donna will help you stay ahead of your game with insights, tools, and strategies that give you the thought leader's edge. Donna and her guests will be asking the edgy questions, helping you discover game-changing shortcuts to better thinking. Also, how to explore the ripple effects of leadership excellence and how to create your life as a living legacy where the legacy you leave is the life you live. So let's get to the show. It's Wise Up Radio on the Rockstar Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Donna Kembrand.
Hello there, and welcome to Wise Up Radio, where we share insights, tools, and strategies for leveraging your learning, leadership, and legacy. I'm your host, Donna Kembrand, the edgy evolutionary. I want to thank you for being here live or listening to the later podcast, which will be available on iTunes Podcast under Wise Up Radio, on the RockstarRadioNetwork.com, and on my business website, GameChangerThinking.com, under the radio show tab. And allow me to thank you in advance for liking my Facebook fan page, which is Facebook.com/GameChangerThinking. Now, the guests and show content that I bring you on Wise Up Radio all address some unique aspect of learning, leadership, and legacy. This is to help you raise your own game in business and life, and also simply to showcase some extraordinary people I've had the pleasure to meet on my life journey. Now, just a little snippet before I introduce my wonderful guest for today, and a little piece of news. You know how it is when you get a blast from the past, where someone emerges that you haven't seen in ages. Well, that's happened to me this last week, and tomorrow I will have the distinct honor to reconnect with an old friend, someone who I've kept in touch with sort of from a distance, but not personally because of our meandering paths in life. And he is none other than Mr. Arun Gandhi. He happens to be the grandson of Mohandas, or as we know him, Mahatma Gandhi. And oh gosh, 20, 21, maybe almost 22 years ago, he was a visiting professor in the town where I live. And I followed up a news article and thought I would arrange a meeting. Well, the phone call went directly through to him and we got chatting and he invited me to his house. And so I had the honor to teach Arun Gandhi how to mind map, which is one of the skills I do continue to teach. And I held a fundraiser for him at the Edna Hiddle Art Gallery in Palm Beach, Florida. And coincidentally, at the time, playing in the theater right next door, and our guest today might find this interesting, given that he's in the theater in certain aspects too, was the actor Burt Reynolds. So I arranged for Burt Reynolds and Arun Gandhi to meet each other, and Burt Reynolds very generously offered to donate $10,000 to the Arun Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. So anyway, Arun will be at my son's college speaking tomorrow. So I'll be scooting up there to meet him and then have a chance to introduce my son, who wasn't even born at that time, to Mr. Gandhi. So it's just something that's tickling me right now, and I thought I would share that with you, my listeners. Now, on to why we're here today, and that is to introduce Mr. Walt Grassel. Now, Walt emerged from a high-tech corporate career, already having greased the wheels for a future romp in the world of public speaking, improv, and stand-up comedy. Now, this even though Walt was, and I don't know that he still is, but he was an introverted engineering manager with a fear of public speaking. He'll tell you about that. He's currently a major player in Toastmasters and a radio host here on the Rockstar Radio Network of Stand Up and Speak Up. He is it's a show for sharing people who have stories, who've overcome their fears and now lead more fulfilling lives. So we'll hear from Walt how he helps people do that. And so let's get to Walt and his story, and feel free to call in. We'll be giving you the call-in number. So Walt, are you here with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Donna, and congratulations on reconnecting with Mr. Gandhi. That's a very impressive story, and it sounds like it was very mutually beneficial. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Now, I understand that you and I used to sort of hang out in similar circles, although you did it as an engineering manager with, was it Hughes and then became Raytheon, or was it the other way around?
No, it was Hughes Aircraft Company, and then it got acquired by GM, and then ultimately the business that I was in got acquired by Raytheon, where I retired from.
Uh-huh. So despite the fact that you were an engineer and with all the stereotypes people have about engineers and how they act and how they think, you were quite the upstart, as I understand, in your program. You're one of the first to volunteer and take leadership position in some of the advanced thinking courses and opportunities they were offering. Could you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, early in my engineering career, I realized that there were a lot smarter engineers, and they really paid attention to detail. And I was so afraid that, you know, that I might miss that one little thing that could cause my design to be flawed. But I noticed a big void in the engineering field, that a lot of the people that they made managers were good engineers, but they never really studied being good leaders. So I saw that as an opportunity. So I started reading every book I could on leadership, and kind of in parallel with that, and this was early in my early 20s, I was made a low-level supervisor. All the people I were supervising were older than me, but I told them I would do it as long as they would make sure that I got proper training. So between corporate training plus my own learning, I embarked on that journey and tried to carve my niche as being a valuable leader within the company. And when things came out like process mapping, mind mapping, these different techniques to do things better, I always wanted to kind of know more than the company was rolling out. So I would go and do library research at the time. This was before the internet, and just find out as much as I could about the subjects. And I think that helped me, and a desire to continually think out of the box and think of new and better ways of doing things kind of became my brand within the company.
That's really cool. Although, you know, I know myself as somebody in the field of creativity, provocateurs and people coming in with new methods and new ways of doing things aren't always the most welcome. Tell us about some of your experiences in introducing some of these techniques and trying to get them integrated into the way of doing business in your operation.
Well, I think I had a mentally healthy attitude. Most of the time, I was one of the allies of the people who were sent in to help train us, because I was trying to learn and was supportive of that. Every once in a while, I would try and show my own initiative, and I'll give you an example. There was this process called Design for Manufacturing and Assembly, where companies would take a design, and before they would put it into production, they would do a redesign and involve the manufacturing and quality people. Well, to me, that seemed kind of silly that you would go through a whole design cycle and spend almost a year of calendar time and several man years of effort to design something, only to basically throw that design away and do another redesign to make it producible. So why don't do that at the beginning of the process? And I had heard of concurrent engineering, and I tried to marry those two ideas. I did it in a little small box that I was responsible for leading the design of, but when I tried to pitch it to the greater good, it wasn't how we do things. And it's my attitude was, look, I will go out there, I will push for something, but I'm not going to make myself a nuisance. If you don't see the value of it, if my time is not right, then I'm okay with that. I feel I've met my obligation. I tried to explain it as best I could. Now, maybe my problems with stage fright may have been one of the reasons why I wasn't able to sell my ideas. But later in life, I chose to do something about it. So I take, you know, responsibility for maybe not being as good a salesman and not being able to present the benefits or try to convince the powers that be. But in an environment where at the time process was king and following process was the way we did things, to come in and then upset that process in a radical way was probably not something that people were willing to do unless it could guarantee results. And this was one of those things that you almost have to take as a leap of faith. And it requires strong facilitation skills. And that was one of my strengths. I learned how to be a facilitative leader. But not a lot of people bought into that. And they didn't believe that you could get consensus from a diverse group of people. They just thought it was too hard. And I found that it really wasn't that difficult if you listen to people and then make sure that they heard each other. I found it pretty easy to get them on the same page, but other people thought it was impossible. So that's kind of the environment. But it was fun, and I enjoyed kind of being the nail that sticks up and needs to get pounded down by the corporation.
That's right, the old head above the parapet.
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, recalling some work I did in a high-tech company, one of them being Hewlett-Packard, and there were similar issues where we spent, in this case, a day going through streamlining certain processes that these senior leaders would have to go through. And the thing that was so fascinating to me, and you've touched on it, is how when we got to the very end, okay, now how are we going to let, you know, the superiors, either even more senior management, no, this is how we want to do things around here, and nobody wanted to be the one to speak up. And I think it spoke as much about the culture as it did with the fact that, as you said, there is a long cycle when we're dealing with, you know, materiel. So there's the soft skills, leadership, management, all those things that need to shift and change over time. But there's also the reality of engineering hardware that is expensive to change over. And so, you know, I'm sure they're quite risk-averse.
Right.
Did you find
out? Yeah, they're risk-averse, and they're very process-focused, and those things inhibit rapid change.
That's right. Okay, awesome. Well, when we get back, we're going to hear Walt's story of how he made the change and shifted into the next stage of his life and career. We'll be right back with Wise Up Radio.
If you're an entrepreneurial leader or visionary and want to stay ahead of your game with insights, tools, and strategies, then stay tuned for more Wise Up Radio with Donna Kimbrand right after these on the Rockstar Radio Network. Others, and that through it, you have the ability to break through any and all barriers, thus allowing you to reach your greatest potential and joyfully step into your life's purpose. What used to take weeks, months, or even years, she can now teach you in a matter of hours with her programs. For more on Kim and her show, go to our website, KimberlyRinaldi.com. That's RinaldiCom. Then join us for Lessons in Joyful Living with your host, Kimberly Rinaldi. Mondays at noon central here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Tune in to DC Live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network for a fun and entertaining look into the music industry with your host, producer, songwriter, and musician, Don Cromwell. DC Live will feature interviews and live performances with an emphasis on connecting you, the fan, with the artists. Guests will include both established and new artists, as well as behind-the-scenes professionals. There'll also be live in-studio and phone interviews, plus music associated with featured artists, and live performances on a regular basis, and a special segment of each show devoted to unknown musicians and bands. For more on Don, check out his website, DonCromwellMusic.com. Ever wonder how the music business really works? What what happens in a studio and what goes into making a hit record. Then be here for the interviews, insights, and live performances. It's DC Live, hosted by producer, songwriter, and musician Don Cromwell, Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network. Welcome back to Wise Up Radio, leveraging your learning, leadership, and legacy with Donna Kimbrand, the Edgy Evolutionary. As thought leaders, you need strategies to help you enjoy the confidence and thrill of riding the wave of rapid change. Donna Kimbrand brings decades of international hands-on experience in business and education, along with an edgy evolutionary approach to effectiveness and joie de vivre. So join the conversation and jumpstart your wits with Wise Up Radio here on the Rockstar Radio Network. And now, here again is your host, Donna Kimbrand.
Welcome back. We're so delighted to have you with us here on Wise Up Radio and with our guest of the day, Walt Brassel. And you can find Walt at his website, www.waltbrassel.com. That's S for sugar, sweet sugar. L.com. Okay. Now, Walt, you worked in this engineering capacity for, gosh, almost or over 37 years. Unless people think you're in your 90s, you did retire very young.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I understand you had quite an interesting exit strategy for yourself that led to the kinds of things you're doing now. So, pray tell.
Okay. I was relatively successful in my career in spite of having a severe case of stage fright. I got where I got through my relationships with people and being out of the box, an out of the box thinker. But when it came time to speak in large group settings, like a general brainstorming meeting of like 200 staff people with a senior leader, and if I raised my hand to contribute, it was very traumatic. The words would come choking out and may or may not make sense. But inside of that, I had a decent career, and I was made a department manager of about 100 design engineers. And we went through some layoffs, but prior to the layoffs, at an all-hands meeting, I'm talking to my people I know individually and have no problem talking to, and I just was terribly nervous and don't even remember if I got all the thoughts out and relied heavily on the PowerPoint slides I had to make somewhat of a sense, yet trying to make eye contact. I was a mess. And we went through some layoffs, and I was tasked with talking to a room full of people about the people that were left behind on how this was because we lost a big program, be considerate of the feelings of the other people. And HR had a list of talking points, and I had to read the talking points because my mind was just blank. And my manager suggested that I really do something about that. So just before turning 50, I joined Toastmasters. And I had heard about Toastmasters about 15 years before. And when it was explained what they do, especially the impromptu speaking where they go around the room and everybody talks for a minute, I go, that's not for me. And,
right. Like walking into a lion's den, really.
Yeah. Is that?
Yeah, keep going.
Is that sound effects coming from you or from somewhere else?
I don't know.
I was hearing something. So, okay. Let's see.
It's the Toastmasters banging on the table there saying, yeah. Walt, we will haunt you until you actually show up.
Okay. So, and anyways, that was like, that distracted me. So I don't usually go back and regret things. You know, I was even divorced twice, and I don't regret that because I'm a better person, but for having gone through that. But not joining Toastmasters is probably my one life regret. So I joined Toastmasters, but for the first year and a half, I didn't speak but six times. And I decided to go get some training. And then I went to these 3 2-day boot camps in the month of February of 2008, and they were in Las Vegas. And when I came back on the from the final one, I realized, you know, these people who are getting paid to speak, they're not, they don't have better speaking skills than I do one-on-one, and they just don't have the fear of public speaking. So I made it my journey to figure it out and conquer that. And since it was 2008, I had about 4.5 years before I could retire when I turned 55. My 37 years with the company has to do with the fact that I started shortly before my 18th birthday. So I went and took improv classes, and I took stand-up comedy classes, and I performed stand-up comedy for the first time as the graduation for a class. And that was probably the big turning point. The graduation was at the Hollywood Improv on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock. The audience were people who were supporting the students, but there were also people walking in off the street. So there were people who had to pay to get in, and they had to pay a 2-drink minimum. And to get up in front of them and get them to laugh. Before I went on stage, I was never so afraid in my life. I was just shaking terribly. But I made it through my set. I got laughs. And when I was done, I was on a high that you could not believe. And compared to that, speaking in front of a Toastmasters audience or any audience was nothing. Even at work, it just changed my mindset. So I kept working at it, and it was setting a time deadline is what really did it for me, because I also started then competing in Toastmaster contests. For those that are not familiar with Toastmasters, twice a year in the spring and the fall, they have 2 different contests of varying types. Most involve speeches, some involve evaluations or table topics, which is impromptu speaking. And I competed in those contests to get stage time. And initially, I would lose at the club level, and then I would advance to the next level up, which was area. And in some of the contests, I was able to advance up to the division. And the highest you can go for every contest but the international one is the district, and I got to district twice for evaluations, and my skills just evolved, but they evolved because I did the work. And so it was that one little thing that got me in a place where I developed my skills, where I think I'm good enough now that I could get paid to speak. However, and where we met was in March of 2012, I decided to go to the Craig Doeswalt's Rockstar Marketing Bootcamp because, so if I'm good enough to speak, what am I going to do when I retire? And that was coming up in like 5 months. So I went there just with a story, and through the mastermind that we both joined, it evolved that, you know what, my market are people that just like me are afraid to speak. So I went and came up with my brand, Stand Up and Speak Up, and told my story and tried to capture some of the life lessons that I learned that helped me overcome this fear. And so with a purpose, when I retired in August, I kind of knew what I was going to do. I was going to write a book and probably speak about it. And then in the fall, I decided, you know what, rather than work on becoming a speaker, it might be easier to hone my message through hosting a radio show. So I decided to host the radio show, and that's kind of where I am now. And it was because I didn't want to just show up as a retiree on August 6th of 2012 and not know what I was going to do and figure it out then. I tried to be proactive. So several months before, I kind of evolved a strategy.
Wow, and it's obviously working very well for you. And I know personally, you also went through quite a transformation in your physical appearance during this time. Are you game to share that and how that fit in with your whole picture?
Yeah, it was actually at one of the first mastermind, which was in May of 2012. One of the members of the mastermind was a fitness trainer, Bobby Kelly, and he gave all of us there his book to read, and I read it. And I went to him, and I said, Bobby, you know, it's 2012 when I retire. I want to start getting fit. And he looked me right in the eye and said, Walt, why can't you start now? And I couldn't look him in the eye and tell him the lies that I tell myself. There really was no reason. I mean, I was busy, but I wasn't that busy. And that mastermind was right before the 3-day weekend for Memorial Day. So I went back on Friday, which I had taken off of work, and I walked on Friday. Oh, I'm sorry. And he had suggested to me that I walk 2 miles a day. Mm-hmm. And so I started walking on that Friday, that Saturday, that Sunday, the Monday holiday. And now we come to the moment of truth, Tuesday. And Tuesday nights I had an improv class. And I go, okay, I'll skip today because I've got improv. Well, when I got home, I was honest with myself and said, you know what? You have time to take a walk before improv class. And I walked. And through walking, I ended up losing close to 50 pounds over a 6, 7, 8 month period. And it was just a couple pounds a week through exercise. And then in November of 2012, I started being more rigorous in my eating. I had taken some baby steps to address my eating. And it was important to me that I made these changes for a couple reasons. One, if you're not honest with yourself, it affects your integrity in front of an audience. And number two, if you're telling people, hey, you can change your behavior, and they look at you and you're not willing to make like dietary changes or work on your health, then it comes across as a disconnect. So plus, since I'm retiring, I want to live long and enjoy my retirement. So it was important to me that I get my health together. So I did that as well.
That's fantastic, Walt. So you're just going from one success to another. And when we come back after the break, what I'd love for you to share with us is, first of all, what's the distinction between improv and stand-up? That's one thing. But also just a little bit more about what that entails, how that's different from just general public speaking and hosting a radio show, perhaps, and some tips for people to overcome stage fright and recoup after distractions and things like that. So we'll be back with Walt Bratzel right after the break.
If you're an entrepreneurial leader or visionary and want to stay ahead of your game with insights, tools, and strategies, then stay tuned for more Wise Up Radio with Donna Kimbrand right after these on the Rockstar Radio Network. Information about book publishing is power. The power to change your authoring life and the power to change the lives of your readers. So join us for Your Guide to Book Publishing, Everything You Want to Know But Didn't Know What to Ask, with your host, Dr. Judith Bryles, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific on the Rockstar Radio Network. You'll hear about statistics, scenarios, and strategies on what to do now. As the book shepherd, Dr. Judith Bryles is in, and each week, she will include publishing professionals that will reveal tips and secrets to the author's journey. If there is a book in you, you want to listen, learn, and yes, call in with your questions each week. For more on Judith and what she can do for you, check out her website, thebookshepherd.com. It's Your Guide to Book Publishing, Everything You Want to Know But Didn't Know What to Ask. Brought to you by Author You and The Book Shepherd, with your host, Dr. Judith Bryles. Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Join host Kaylin Amadio for Act Local, Marketing for Small Business. Kaylin helps concerned, confused, and even clueless small business entrepreneurs market simply, safely, and successfully. Join Kaylin for some Monday morning marketing madness that will leave you with more ideas, more understanding, and more knowledge about why and how harnessing the internet gives you the power to bring your business to the next level. Whether you need help with online media, social media, video, or mobile marketing, marketing for your local business, this marketing black belt will guide you into the 21st century with easy tips, tricks, and techniques that get your local business seen and heard. Each week, Kaylin will feature a new tip that you can use today, as well as a range of guest experts who are passionate about helping local business owners thrive. Act Local Marketing for Small Business airs every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Welcome back to Wise Up Radio, leveraging your learning, leadership, and legacy with Donna Kimbrand, the Edgy Evolutionary. As thought leaders, you need strategies to help you enjoy the confidence and thrill of riding the wave of rapid change. Donna Kimbrand brings decades of international hands-on experience in business and education, along with an edgy evolutionary approach to effectiveness and joie de vivre. So join the conversation and jumpstart your wits with Wise Up Radio here on the Rockstar Radio Network. And now, here again is your host, Donna Kimbrand.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Walt Russell, and you can find him on the RockstarRadioNetwork.com on his own radio show called Stand Up and Speak Up. Now, Walt, you shared with us earlier that you began the radio show as a host as partly by way of honing your message. And then you just shared with us some really key points about being honest with yourself about some of the actions you've been taking. What are some of your cross-training principles that you share with people?
Well, I believe that there's more than one way to solve a problem, and it's not necessarily going in a straight line. And maybe that goes back to my corporate out-of-the-box thinking. For instance, conquering the fear of public speaking, improv and stand-up were two things that I used. And also when I talked about the weight loss, that's about taking small steps to achieve your goal. So there's common threads between different activities. So if you want to make change, if you make change in another area of your life where it's easier to change, that will help you in the areas that it's more difficult, both if there's some skill that you can apply from the other activity or just the fact that you are exercising what I think of as like the change muscle. So the more you change in one area, the easier it gets to change in another. If you do the same thing all the time and you live your life very rigidly, it's really hard to break out of that box. But once you start breaking out of it in one area, it becomes easier to break out in others.
That's really cool. And it's actually supported by brain research. In the upper cortex, which deals with our intellectual processing and so on, it's divided into the so-called right brain and left brain, or right hemisphere, left hemisphere, and they're connected by the corpus callosum, this fibrous tissue between the two sides. And it's been shown in studies, which is exactly what you're saying, Walt, that, for instance, if you're having trouble in numbers or mathematics, and let's say you're an aspiring accountant, well, that's going to lead to a career or life of frustration unless you sort of get to grips with that. So one of the ways you can improve your quantitative skill set is actually by, for example, taking up dancing, and where you hear music and you have to learn steps, but the steps go in a rhythm. So you're actually building in the numbers, but within a context that's more right-brain and qualitative. And so by leveraging your right brain skills of rhythm and spatial awareness and so on, you could actually leverage up your left brain skills of the numbers and the timing. So that's really cool. So yeah. Exercising your change muscle, that's cool.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I may have heard or read, came across this somewhere, but I didn't really understand the science of it. I just knew that, at least for me, that it worked, and it seemed like something to share as much as I can so that others can try it. And I'm glad it's based, you know, that there is some science to it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I love that you've labeled it your cross-training principle, because that's something that people really get in today's more health-conscious environment, where people are, you know, working out and getting across muscle confusion and other aspects. So it makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like that out-of-the-box thinking, like you apply cross-training to things other than just sports.
That's right. So You know, it's pretty cool that when you had the stage fright, like you said, you went head first into your first Toastmaster. I find a very daunting audience, even though they might be very embracing on one level. I've also had myself some experiences that were quite fear-making. And then you went into improv and stand-up. So could you share with us some of the distinctions, like between improv and stand-up, and some of the things you had to learn? What were some of those strategies, tactics, tips that allowed you to actually do it without wanting to melt into the ground and disappear?
Okay. First, the difference between improv and stand-up. Stand-up is basically prepared routines, and there are several formulas for why people laugh. It's basically based on surprise, and a lot of times you lead people down one path and then you go and tell another path. So the setup of the joke leads people down one story, but then you tell the ending is a completely different story, and the surprise makes it funny. So by taking stand-up, you learn how to make people laugh. And when you are giving a speech, if you can, within the context of your subject matter or your stories, add humorous pieces, getting a laugh with the audience helps you connect with the audience, and that helps reduce the stage fright. Where improv comes in is that it forces you to be in the moment. And one of the symptoms of stage fright is a person's mind going blank. And it's that fear that I'm not going to be able to remember my speech or what I'm going to talk about. And in improv, it's totally unscripted. So when you're doing an improv scene, the structure are the rules of improv, that you will agree with what somebody tells you. If they have an imaginary object that they hand to you in the scene and they tell you it is a box, you can't say, oh, thanks for this radio or thanks for this rock. It is what they label it. You have to agree. But you have to draw on things in your brain. And if you don't know, you come up with something. And it just helps you practice being in the moment and trusting that if something's in your brain, you can pull it out. And both of those helped me a lot. Probably the one that helped the most was improv, because one of my biggest fears and biggest problems being in front of an audience is my mind would go blank. And I could not get out a coherent thought. But after doing now about 500 hours of improv, I'm now comfortable giving a speech basically from an outline. And I know that I can recall the outline and know what stories I wanted to tell. And if it's not exactly what I wanted to say, it's okay, because what I say will make sense. 6-7 years ago, there's no way that would have happened. And so these elements, they offer different things. Now, Toastmasters is the obvious one that people go to. They teach you the rules, how to use gestures and all that. But you can get so caught up in being precise that it actually inhibits you and continues your stage fright. So I recommend that people try different things, especially improv. Improv is good in life because, in fact, there's a book called Improv Wisdom by a lady named Madsen, Patricia Madsen, who teaches at Stanford. She talks about the improv rules of agreement, of having fun, all applies to life as well. And I can't recommend improv enough to people.
Yeah, I think it's true. And it's like you said, it applies to life as well as business. Because, of course, even in any conversation around the dinner table or waiting in the line at the post office, you really have no idea what a person is going to say. And we need to be ready at any moment to respond appropriately or ratchet up the conversation to a different level if that's part of our game plan. So that would be fabulous practice just for, you know, loosening up conversation in general. Or I guess, have you done anything with matchmaking or dating in improv?
Well, let me take it another step more towards like relationships. One of the things about agreement is we've all been, I think, at some point in our life talking to somebody and they're saying, well, I'm upset about this. And we come back with, oh, no, you're not upset. You just blah, blah, blah. No, if they tell you they're upset, they're upset. So you have to agree with what they said. And then you can try and figure out why they're upset. But a lot of times we'll deny something, and you never want to deny in an improv scene. You always want to agree. And, you know, a lot of us can get into denial. And even things like Madsen uses in the book, the child who sees a monster in the closet, instead of saying, oh, there's no such thing as monsters, work with it. Say, oh, okay, so tell me about the monster. What did it look like? Let them get their imagination out, agree with what they said, and talk to them about it. There may be something that they're afraid of. They're afraid of the dark or whatever. But you can explore that with the child. But if you just poo-poo their thoughts, then things go nowhere. So it's – I do the rules of improv when I'm in a scene kind of naturally. I'm blanking a little bit about talking about all of them. But agreement is one of the most important ones.
That's really cool. And to me, I do a lot of work with collaborative facilitation. And one of the ground rules is just that you're willing to stay open and not always be like seeking to react and jump on every word. And what I notice in our society today is that people are so reactive, and based on their own filters of how they see things, but it's a reactiveness that breeds discontent and conflict. And so I think you're absolutely right that improv taken to a level of improving relationships, personal relationships, but also between groups, between countries, between different factions and across society. Have you seen improv work at this level?
Yeah, I think another way, especially this aspect of it, is like Covey's, I think it's the fifth habit, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, people are too much in a hurry to get their position out, and they don't listen to the other person. And if you don't do that, then there's no way to find a common ground. You have to listen first, understand, and then get the other person to listen. The other person is more likely to listen once they know they've been understood.
Right, that's right. And we have one more segment here to listen and understand from the amazing Walt Raffel. When we come back after the break, he's going to share with us about his experiences in Hollywood and what's coming next for him. We'll be right back with Wise Up Radio.
If you're an entrepreneurial leader or visionary and want to stay ahead of your game with insights, tools, and strategies, then stay tuned for more Wise Up Radio with Donna Kimbrand right after these on the Rockstar Radio Network. Get ready to learn and play with Mrs. A, your host, Barbara Allison, Mondays at 11 a.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network. Did you know that kids are only 20% of the population, but they are 100% of the future? How are you preparing your child for that future? The years between the ages of 0 and 6 are crucial for learning and development. Barbara Allison is a teacher, parent, and author on supporting children's early learning. Learning starts even before a child is born, and parents are children's first teacher. Join Mrs. A for ideas, tips, and suggestions for fun learning and play activities as she helps you support your child. Starting early is starting smart. For more on Mrs. A, her books, the show, and her blog, check out her website, 123kindergarten.com. Then, come learn and play with Mrs. A, with your host, Barbara Allison, Mondays at 11 a.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network.
You want to get a contact high? Tune in for fun, inspiration, and motivation every Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Learn how to maximize your mojo and just say no to the status quo. Get inspired and motivated by a fun-loving coach who knows what it's like to get through this thing called life. with your High on Life coach, Audra Irwin, each Friday at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time and 12 noon Eastern, right here on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Welcome back to Wise Up Radio, leveraging your learning, leadership, and legacy with Donna Kimbrand, the Edgy Evolutionary. As thought leaders, you need strategies to help you enjoy the confidence and thrill of riding the wave of rapid change. Donna Kimbrand brings decades of international hands-on experience in business and education, along with an edgy evolutionary approach to effectiveness and joie de vivre. So join the conversation and jumpstart your wits with Wise Up Radio here on the Rockstar Radio Network. And now, here again is your host, Donna Kimbrand.
We are back with our special guest of the day, Walt Rassel. And if you want to contact Walt either to speak on your stage or help you overcome your stage fright, you can reach him at walt@waltrassel.com. That's G-R-A-S-S-L.com. Now, Walt, we were just talking about improv and stand-up and public speaking. What's the role that audiences play in yourself as a performer or a speaker? Does it make a difference how they respond?
Yeah, Donna. There's a couple things about audiences. You need to know your audience. For instance, their demographic. You don't want to make a reference to I Love Lucy if your audience are all in their 20s. And by the same token, you don't want to make a lot of hip hop references to a room full of seniors unless they're a really hip room full of seniors. So from that perspective, even in a corporate environment or a negotiation, you always want to know as much as you can about the people you're talking to, because then it becomes like a conversation with someone you know. Now, there's a difference between a Toastmasters audience, a stand-up audience, and an improv audience. Toastmaster audiences are generally very supportive, but they can be a little bit nitpicky and critical that way. But ultimately, they're there to support you, make you a better speaker, and encourage you as much as possible. A stand-up audience, on the other hand, they want to be entertained, and they want to laugh, and they want to laugh frequently. So you can't get up there and tell a long story unless you're like a Bill Cosby, who has a background that people will stand up there and watch, or sit there and watch you get to a punchline in 15 minutes because you're so entertaining a storyteller. But as a new comic, you want to be funny, and if you're not, they can turn on you, especially if they've had too much adult beverages. Now, an improv audience is an interesting thing, because improv should not, done right, should not be jokey, because a joke kind of kills the momentum of an improv scene. But what improv audiences are famous for is they enjoy watching you struggle and work through it. And the fact, like, there's a game we call the alphabet game, where each performer goes back and forth, and their first word, or the first word of their next line, starts with the next letter of the alphabet in sequence. And to see you struggle to start a line with Q or X or Z and keep it in the context of the scene is a struggle. And when you do that, that's when you get the support, especially when you do it well. So each audience is different in how they react to you, but there are so knowing your audience, so you don't necessarily want an improv audience to be rolling on the floor laughing. If in the struggle they get to that point, that's a good thing. And a Toastmasters audience is liable to be more reserved, and you know, they're all different. But you definitely, in any situation, you should know your audience, even if you're just having a one-on-one conversation.
And where do you draw the line when you're trying to involve the audience, let's say in improv, and you're picking out some loud shirt that somebody's wearing, or a hairdo, or some comment someone has made? You know, there's a point where involving them is very funny, and some people take it well, and there's a point where you either step over the line or they're just very testy. How do you handle that as a performer?
Well, so that's the thing is where I would say, unless you know how to handle it and you have prepared for all situations, you should not try it. And again, with improv, if you do less inter with the audience and it's more in a stand-up environment. But if you're going to engage the audience, you have to prepare for them to be uncooperative, for them to get belligerent, for them to try and be funnier than you. And most of the time you'll see comics with put downs, which look like they're ad-libbed, but they've practiced those and they just pull them out and deliver them as if they're ad-libbed. Mm-hmm. Because it's just like if you're a speaker, what are you going to say when the phone rings? If you wait until that moment to say something, then you're probably not going to handle it the right way. And the worst thing you can do when there's something happens in the audience is to ignore it, because that's you then break the connection with the audience. Because if you get a connection with them and we're in the moment, it's just like earlier in the show, I guess the cell phone was vibrating and I heard the noise, and I could, if I pretended like it didn't happen, number one, I'm distracted, but by acknowledging it, at least, you know, I hear it. If the audience hears it, you hear it. We all know that something has happened. We deal with it, then we move on. But otherwise it's like, well, didn't they hear that cell phone go off? You know, I've heard people speak, or there's a loud noise, or an air conditioner comes on boom, with a loud noise, or a car backfires. I mean, everybody hears it and they're distracted. But the minute you acknowledge that it happened, then it's like, oh, okay, we're all on the same page. We all heard it. We're good. And then you can move on.
That's right. Yeah, that's cool. Now, speaking of moving on, you have taken this new skill of speaking to new heights. I understand that through auditions, you've been
okay. Can you repeat that? I didn't quite hear that. It cut out. Okay, it looks like we've lost Donna, but I believe she was going to ask me about my experience with the Groundlings. I recently passed an audition with the Groundlings to get into their actors program. For those of you that don't know, the Groundlings is an improv and acting school in Los Angeles. There have been a lot of famous people that have gone on to star in Hollywood, like Will Ferrell graduated from the Groundlings. Several of the performers on Saturday Night Live have graduated from the Groundlings. And I made a choice to, after doing about 500 hours of local improv training, to take it to the next level. Do I see myself as being an actor? Maybe, maybe not. But I want to push myself and continue to grow as a performer and as a speaker. So that is why I have passed the Groundlings audition at the end of August, and I'm taking my first class coming up in the middle of October. In I guess 2 weeks from tomorrow will be my first Groundlings improv class, and we'll see where it goes. Most people fail the first time and have to repeat it. So the expectations are that I probably will do the same, but I'm going to keep plugging because that's how I roll. Evidently, we've lost Donna, and I'm hijacking her show while she's gone. Let's see. The next thing she was going to ask me, I believe, was about what are my next interest, radio performing or teaching, and what my plans are to. Okay, you there, Donna?
I am back. I'm so sorry the signal disappeared, but tell us about your plans.
Okay. I plan on speaking and developing a program. I'll be attending a boot camp with a person, Maurice Domino, Uncover Your $1 Million Message, to further hone what it is I'm going to talk about. And then I will go and speak to local service clubs and I have a potential booking with the Project Management Institute, one of their chapters in the Los Angeles area, to speak in April of 2014. So I'm trying to figure out what it is I'm going to speak on. And whereas a lot of people form a business, talk about it, then write a book and host a radio show, I'm kind of doing that in the reverse order. I did the radio show, published a book, and now I'm figuring on speaking. And then as opportunities come up, I will be coaching people. I always, in the workplace, was a mentor and coached, and I referred to the seven habits. I had taught the seven habits probably poorly with my stage fright, but I was just so in love with the material and wanted as many people to know about it. I did that as a volunteer. So I'm about helping people any way I can, whatever medium works the best.
Fantastic. Now, I understand, too, you talk about honing your, or uncovering your million-dollar message. I understand you have a number of what are called Walt's rules. Could you give us one or two of those, Walt, that might be core to your message?
Yes, and obviously I can't get to all of them. There's a tab on my website that has them. But the biggest one, I think, and the most important, is just because you couldn't doesn't mean you can't. And that means if I can, at the age of 50, attack stage fright and overcome it, you're never too old to change. You just have to want to change. I think when we're babies and don't know any better, we fall down, we get up, and we eventually learn to walk. If the first time we fell, we said, I can't, then we'd all be crawling around on all fours. When we go to ride a bicycle, there's a little bit of peer pressure. I can't, but we want to ride our bikes, and that helps us get through that. But then as we get older, it becomes easier, instead of failing in publicly, that we just say, I can't. And if you can work on that mindset, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. And I see we're running out of time here, but I have a tab of Walt's rules at my website.
Awesome. So, Walt, just to finish up here on the Wise Up Radio Show, given that the owl is our mascot, have you got a quick word on what you give a hoot about?
Well, actually, you have less than 30 seconds. I realize you can't see the timing cues. Do you want to just wrap it up?
Well, sure. Okay. Well, I thank you so much, Walt. And I think you threw that little ringer of my internet going down to practice my own improv. So thanks for that. And that's a wrap of Wise Up Radio for today with our guest Walt Grassel of waltgrassel.com. And I'd love to have you remember that the legacy you leave is the life you live. So go for your own epic life adventure. This is Donna Kim Brand from Wise Up Radio and Walt Grassel, my guest, signing off. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for being a part of Wise Up Radio, leveraging your learning, leadership, and legacy with Donna Kimber.